My name is Victor Kubik. Once again, welcome to another edition of Inside United. This is where we talk to interesting people inside the United Church of God and people whom we cross paths with. Our guests today are two young people, both employees of the United Church of God, working in various media functions. First of all, we have Arianna Del Signore. Actually, just learned how to pronounce her name fully. Arianna Del Signore, who is Associate Editor for Internal Publications, which includes the United News, Festival and Camp Brochures, and a myriad of other publications. She's relatively new, working here full-time in this job, but she is very well established. Then we also have Chaz Leathers, whom you have heard before. He is producer for the Inside United podcast and holds various roles in media production, both video and audio. I've known him now here for several years and have just appreciated his willingness to be creative and do things, and he's been the engineer for the Inside United podcast. I've been told not to disclose their ages, but I do know, I'll tell you this.
We're young, that's all you need to know.
However, I can say this, is that if you combine your two ages, you're still a long ways off from what I have. So that's what we have. But we're going to talk today about attitudes about the future, about the notion that younger generations share a general feeling of apathy, anxiety, and confusion in their own lives. And our children are beset on all sides by doomsday narratives rooted in everything from global warming to nuclear holocaust to economic collapse, and for those in the church, even the apocalypse that precedes the return of Jesus Christ. This cocktail of emotions, apathy, anxiety, and confusion mix together and create an overall feeling of hopelessness. I want to say myself, too, is that I have grown in the culture of end times, apocalyptic times, eschatology.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah.
The end times are always here. Mm-hmm. And I sat in services one time back in 1968 or 1969, and the speaker that day said, and I have it in my notes, in 1972, there will be no London. I was a student in England. And so, whoa, you know, we sat there. I wrote
that.
And as
we know, in 1972, London ceased to exist. We no longer go to London.
And that produces also a confusing feeling of, you know, what's truth?
Yeah.
You know, and you know, are they crying wolf? You know, we've been very, very careful about setting dates.
Yeah.
You know, about things. But also we are to look at the signs of the times.
I think UCG has done a pretty good job of not setting dates and times too often. Because I think there's kind of a danger in doing that, because I know from my experience of growing up in the United Church of God, I heard all the time when I was a kid from very well-meaning adults that I was never going to like reach old age, that I was going to the world was going to end long before I had to worry about retirement or anything like that. And that can have an effect on people that maybe the people who say that aren't entirely aware of. And I guess my goal isn't, I've been wanting to talk about this for a long time, because not to tell people what they can and can't say. My biggest concern is just kids aren't sure if they should invest $100,000 in a college education if we're all going to die of global warming in 10 years or, you know. What's the answer to that? Why do you keep pushing forward? Why do you have kids? Why do you plan for the future? And why would you kind of live the fullest life possible if it's just going to end at any second?
Mm-hmm. Well, I truly believe that we have to have a hopeful look to the future. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that I got married. I'm glad I have a son. I'm glad I have four grandchildren. Mm-hmm. If I became a hermit and said the end is near and walked around with an end is near, you know, sandwich board, you know, to myself, even, you know, that would not be a full life. And we just don't really know. And we'll take a look at a scripture or two that, you know, gives us advice about looking to the future.
Yeah, I think that's good, because I think it really comes down, this might sound like a cat poster you'd see in kindergarten, but it kind of comes down to attitude is everything. And I think this is the point that the Bible makes too, or that, you know, God makes through the Bible, that you need to live your life the same way if the world is going to end in 5 minutes or if it's going to end in 500 years. Like, I think the Bible deliberately, this is my perspective, I love you to weigh in on this. I think the Bible very deliberately keeps the date and the time mysterious, because that's not the focus. It's not what matters. It gives us some signposts so that we can recognize what happens when it happens.
Well, I do believe that God does not have a little note on a big bulletin board that has the exact time and date.
Yeah.
I really don't. Here's why. If he had a date already in mind, mm-hmm. he would have to make everything work out, you know, to fix that date.
Yeah.
And one thing that God will not tamper with humanity, whether it's in the church, those who are converted, or those outside, is messing with people's free will.
Mm-hmm.
He allows people to make choices and decisions.
Yeah.
Now, he can see the general direction it's going, and he has had a plan. He's had a plan for mankind, and it has had prophecy as it's, you know, played itself out.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't believe that he has every single last point nailed down.
Yeah.
And so it depends upon what we do. Sometimes we think prophetically that we have a certain president and he's signifying the end of all time,
mm-hmm.
all the time. And frankly, I have personally a short-term view. Don't be prepared
yeah.
for Jesus Christ to return. And I have a long-term view. Mm-hmm. You know, we have things that we want to build. We're building churches around the world. We're establishing congregations. We're not telling people, sorry, we can't help you establish a church, or we can't help you with boreholes or,
yeah.
you know, humanitarian things, because you're going to die anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That is a very toxic mentality.
Yeah.
But a godly mentality is one of faith and living in faith. So,
I mean, you look in the Bible and Christ was always emphasizing, preach the gospel, feed my sheep. And I think that's something that continues. You know, he talked about the end times too, and he spoke as if they were coming soon, even back then. And I think that kind of teaches us to always live in a state of, you know, the world could end in my lifetime, in anyone's lifetime. I'm sure people living through the Holocaust, you know, living in concentration camps, probably thought, like, there's no way life can go on after this. You know, 6 million people are dying and there's bombs going off and my neighborhood's gone. I'm sure people thought then, you know, this could be the tribulation. So I think living with that in mind, that the world can end at any time and you need to be prepared spiritually, but you also need to be continuing to go forward. You still need to be like cultivating young people and cultivating future leaders and still looking to the mm-hmm. future.
My parents were survivors, not of the Holocaust in the sense like the Jewish Holocaust, but they were survivors of World War II. And they had to live day by day, you know, through that. But, you know, they had a positive outlook, and they ended up in the United States, and they raised a family. And I was born in Germany. I was born in a refugee camp, you know, that way too. And things looked bleak at times, but they always had hope. They always had hope. And you have interviews with people who've been in concentration camps, like Corrie ten Boom, you know, who had faith that, you know, God was going to open things. And I know that that was not always possible for others because many died mm-hmm. around her.
Yeah.
But we need to be thinking that God is with us, we're close to him, and we're going to be living our lives fully, and we're going to be looking forward to not just saving ourselves, but being a blessing and being servants to others.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest takeaway for me, I think, is just that the gospel seems to be all about preaching this message of hope,
mm-hmm.
and the world around us is very hopeless. Like, not the world itself. It's not actually hopeless. It's just the message that we get because we're all plugged into media all the time. And, you know, not to get on too much of a soapbox, but like fear is the thing that sells. So like news corporations, everything is tied to fear, and everything from Obama installs a basketball court at the White House to here's a picture of Donald Trump's wig flying off. Like mm-hmm. even that's kind of painted as, and this is the person leading the free world. Like mm-hmm. how much time do we have left if this is our leader? And everything is kind of painted with this really broad brush of fear and hopelessness because the media outlets want to kind of keep you tethered to them. They mm-hmm. keep coming back to them because they've got your back. You start thinking that it's true and you start really perceiving that as the world around you. And that's where I think it gets dangerous, is it gets hopeless and people don't want to invest in their education, their lives. They don't mm-hmm. want to have kids.
Mm-hmm.
They get very apathetic towards themselves. And that leads to all other kinds mm-hmm. of things like depression and drug use and everything, just general confusion.
And I think too, that in the church, you know, from our study of the Bible, mm-hmm. prophecy is not about primarily about the beast and the horrors and people being bulldozed into mass graves. You know,
mm-hmm.
we've seen those kinds of pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Prophecy is about the return of Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Prophecy is about the establishment of a new world order.
Mm-hmm.
And also, the story of the Bible is about how individually to God, we are all precious. Mm-hmm. That God has a pathway for everyone's life. When I take a look at those positive things, it really puts a different perspective and a different color on some of this negative. And that's what I feel that we in the church need to sell, or mm-hmm. we need to proclaim that message yeah. of hope, but not, of course, shy away from the King of the South yeah. and all that kind of thing that scares mm-hmm. the liver out of people.
Yeah, I don't think it's good to ignore the bad things that are supposed to happen and all that, but like the focus really needs to be on the hope of it.
And I think mm-hmm. that's also where the church kind of comes in with offering that hope, because as young people go through life around them on a earthly view, you know, they're going to college because everyone goes to college now and, you know, you need a degree, and they don't know exactly what they want to major in, but they might major in something. They, you know, rack up debt, they graduate, they get a job somewhere that might not even be in their field, that doesn't pay what they need to buy a house, have a family, you know, mm-hmm. adult, as we say. And they have this feeling of anxiety and hopelessness that, you know, at 25, they're already tired and they're already, they don't see a future, even though they've done all the things they think society is telling them to do. And I think that's where the hope in the church really comes in, because this life isn't all there is, and those physical things aren't all there is. And mm-hmm. I think offering that hope, and especially kids in the church, like, you know, those, I don't want to say we, but young people in the church, like, we have something that those in the world don't have, when, you know, we might have the same, we might have debt, we might have all the same issues, but we have a hope that's greater than just what we see.
That's what I feel has been one of the biggest positive products of the church, or its, our purposes, is that we've been able to hold out that hope. Mm-hmm. I would hate to be out there and not understand the things that I do biblically, you know, prophetically. I know that when I heard that statement in 1972, there'll be no London, and I heard that in 1968 or 1969. And then I was started out in the ministry in 69 as a ministerial trainee. I would say that my attitude, even with that there, which I don't know if I believed it, I don't know how much I believed that there would be no London in 1972. Mm-hmm. But I will say this, is that my ministry, or, you know, even working for my mentor and being trained all of a sudden, was a positive experience. You know, we try to talk to people about what they should be doing in their lives, how they should change their lives, how they should have happy marriages, how they should rear their children, and so forth. And in the doing of these things, there was a joy and a happiness no matter what. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't this overall doom that, you know, we're just being thrown out to sea and it's just a matter of time before we all drown.
Yeah, and that really gets to another big thing about this, which is just the lack of control. Is that, again, like all the kind of doomsday narratives that kind of swirl around people, the scariest part of it is that it's all out of your control. Like, mm-hmm. you don't control the big stuff happening in the world, like global warming and economic collapse. Like, you can't do much to control that. You also don't control, I don't mean to make the return of Jesus to sound like a hopeless thing, but you also don't control when that happens. Mm-hmm. Like, you've just got to be ready when it happens. It's you're not a part of the conversation with that. And I think what you touched on there about having a family and still living a full life, that is the one thing that you can control.
Well, the thing too is, when you take a look at people in the world, we have billionaires mm-hmm. who are miserable.
Yeah.
And people who are in the entertainment field, and people who aren't faithful to one another, and live that lifestyle, but they've got money, they've got cars, they've got anything mm-hmm. that, you know, people mm-hmm. think make them happy. And then that's also relative. I go to Africa, and we work with people who have an income of $42, $45 a month and mm-hmm. have a family of 10. I mean, I don't know how in the world they do it, you know. And mm-hmm. one of them didn't even have a garden.
Yeah.
And they're sitting there smiling and laughing, you know, and their kids are playing with little toys that they made out of stones and sticks and, mm-hmm. you know, just junk, you know. They're all laughing and giggling, and there's a sense of joy among them. Mm-hmm. And not to say that that is what I, you know, recommend, but it is also relative.
Yeah.
You mm-hmm. know, about life.
A family mm-hmm. friend once told me a long time ago that if you have plenty of food on the table, you have a lot of problems. And if you don't have food on the table, you only have one problem. And it's kind of sad when you think about it, but I have seen that, you know, even in America, especially, like, we've been a very blessed nation. And along with that, I think when we have, you know, we don't have food anxiety, we know we'll always be able to at least afford fast food for the most part. And, mm-hmm. you know, we don't have a lot of those same problems. we have a lot more social problems, and we like negative headlines, like we find those interesting and we kind of search for that. And I think that does contribute to the feeling of like a lack of control among young people.
What would you say? What type of thing would you react to by having somebody in a leadership position preaching, teaching, you know, broadcasting, whatever, podcasting, whatever,
yeah,
and telling young people to turn things around mentally?
I think focusing on the fact that there are things outside of your control and that those don't have to control your life outlook, that there's something better. Because when you just see what's around you and you only see these problems and adults, older adults are telling you that global warming will kill the earth in 12 years, you wonder if you even have a future. And I think focusing on the future and focusing on telling young people you can contribute something, you're unique, and that God has something planned for you. Mm-hmm. That's will make your life in this life better. It'll make your life more peaceful. Even when bad things do happen to you, you have this knowledge that's kind of raised you above whatever circumstances you're in. And like you mentioned, that you've seen people in Africa that have so much less than we have here, and yet they seem so happy. And I think we focus on that in a really third world sense, but we can focus on that in an American sense too, mm-hmm. that you know, you're in debt and you're 25 and you work at a pizza shop and you want to work in your field and you're just struggling to figure out how to do this adulting thing, as we say.
Mm-hmm. And I do think that's a good point, is that I say attitude is everything because it should translate into action. So if you're starving, having a good attitude about starving isn't going to fill your stomach mm-hmm. with food. But you need to have the right attitude to like go out and do what you have to do to get food. And it's I just want to make it clear that I'm not talking about not addressing these problems that are around us. Like mm-hmm. I do think that if there are environmental issues, we should do what we can to help that, and you know, we should do what we can to help the world around us, but we need to like really recognize what's within our sphere of control. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. when something's above our head and out of our control, when we've done everything that we can do, when you actually take action, but then you take all the action that you can take, you need to have a boundary there where you don't just descend into getting depressed
despair,
about
yeah.
what you can't fix.
I know that my wife and I have done humanitarian work now. Mm-hmm. We started our own nonprofit 20 years ago. And, mm-hmm. and I'll have to say that mentally, that thing has done so much for us, as far as, not that it takes our attention off of the negative, but it gives us a real sense of joy to see changes and good things happen in people's lives. Mm-hmm. What a joy. It's just exciting. I don't know what the world's going to do, but I'm happy for those people mm-hmm. you know, whom we helped. And we do it over and over again, and it's created a sense of, not diversion, mm-hmm. but a sense of, there's somebody else, there's other people in this world that are suffering besides me or my mm-hmm. thoughts, and I'm part of the greater community of humanity.
Yeah, and I think going along with that, one of the biggest things I've noticed, and you kind of just reiterated mm-hmm. that, is doing something, like mm-hmm. just doing something, whether you're a young person serving in your congregation that helps to make the church and the truth your identity, or you're going outside your comfort zone and meeting new people and serving your community, or you're starting a nonprofit for different countries. I think doing something and just growing by doing that really helps you to feel invested in something and to have a purpose.
And I will say that I think just kind of recognizing the I feel weird saying youth, just the youths, the youngsters, but like recognizing they're around, there is like this attitude that they have of like they are very involved in world issues, which I think mm-hmm. is a good thing.
Yeah.
And that's something we have an upcoming project with, where we interviewed Ben Light, and mm-hmm. I'm not sure when that's coming out, but that'll be sometime in the near future. And he kind of talks about that too. He talks about how they're all very involved in these world issues, everything from the economy to, you know, government and global warming. And I think that is good, but it has to translate into action. I think mm-hmm. when you have that dichotomy where you're just really passionate about something, but it doesn't translate into, you know, a positive action, that's when like just the wheels are spinning and you get stressed out mm-hmm. and depressed and everything. It's very fulfilling to find ways that you can help people to do something outside of yourself. Because again, that seems to be something that this generation is very concerned with, is other people and helping other people. But that does come back around when you help somebody, like you said, and kind of helps your own attitude, helps your own spirit.
And you grow and you look outside yourself.
Yeah.
Well, I would say that the young people, young people, that they can come through with a big heart. I've seen this happen. Mm-hmm. We had a doctor once visit us from Chernobyl and stayed with us. And one of the young people around was hearing his story and gave him $100 because he felt so sorry for him. He really couldn't afford it, but he felt so sorry for him. He felt so good about it. You know, he still talks about how he mm-hmm. helped kids in Chernobyl. He felt like he had something that, mm-hmm. that was useful like that. And I find that both the millennial generation, as it's called, or the Y, generation, is that I don't differentiate. You know, people get people pigeonholed into these boxes, but I find that with these people, there is an inner heart.
You're facing different circumstances, but like the core problem that you're facing is kind of the same. We've faced a lot of the similar issues mm-hmm. throughout the generations. I think there's like a lot to learn from each other.
I do feel like there's the lesson of history that's been written. Mm-hmm. You know, Jesus Christ in his great Olivet prophecy, you know, where he was asked by his disciples, when is the end of this age? I mean, you know, he gave them a list of things that would happen, and they were horrible things. Mm-hmm. However, he did say, watch therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. So we're to, you know, be aware, be watchful, mm-hmm. and be attuned. But what do we watch? We're not watching to try to figure out when it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. We're to watch ourselves and to prepare ourselves. That's the watch that is, so that we're counted worthy to escape. Mm-hmm. As Luke has the same account in Luke 21. Also, who is then, in verse 45, a faithful and wise servant whom his master made ruler over his household to give them food in due season? Blessed is the servant whom his master, when he comes, will find so doing. You know, somebody who's kind of got his sleeves rolled up as far as work, as far as own personal life, mm-hmm. as far as life itself. Mm-hmm. Not somebody who's sitting in a cave and, you know, a hermit, but person who is just aware of the times. And to me, one of the greatest revelations that I have is the fact that I kind of know how it's going to end. Mm-hmm. I know the markers, the milestones, and who knows, maybe 2020 is the last year. I do not know. Mm-hmm. One of my goals and things I want to outlive or to live to is to see my granddaughter get married. Mm-hmm. To me, I'm looking that she's 14 right now. She better not get married right
now. You know?
But I do want to, you know, see that day come. Mm-hmm. And I look forward to it and plan for it and have it a joyous occasion and have her think about family, marriage, and children. Mm-hmm. So I feel like we, as the young people, young adults mm-hmm. in the church, need to be purveyors of this kind of optimism.
Well, mm-hmm. you look at Noah, he was told, okay, a flood's going to happen. He didn't say, I mean, there's no record of if God told him when or how long it would be. He just said, build an ark. And he just built until it was finished. And mm-hmm. I think that's what we need to do now, too. Like, we don't have a physical ark. There's not, you know, we can't see, okay, this project is finished. Now the flood's going to come. Now Christ is going to return. Mm-hmm. It's not exactly the same, but I think we can learn a lot from that example of building because you know the end. You don't know when, but you're going to keep working until whatever God's given you to do is finished.
And everybody has their own ark to build. Mm-hmm. We all have. I have my ark to build. It's about half the time that Noah spent building his ark.
Yeah.
But that I've had the things that I have built and to reflect on and say, have I done well or have I done poorly? And some things I've done real well and some things I wish I could have done better. Mm-hmm. We've really enjoyed having Chaz and Arianna with us today. It's been nice to be able to have the three of us just have this discussion. We hope to have some more discussion with you
because that'd be great.
We've had a lot of good thoughts that were brought here. So thank you for joining us on Inside United. We hope that you'll come back soon for more.
This is a production of the United Church of God. For more, visit ucg.org.